probably where that came from.
All right. I hate this part. He's like, oh, Todd, do this, do that. So I'll just say something. We'll start talking. You're going to interview me, but I'm going to ask you questions. We're going to decipher. Whoa, Todd just stole your pen.
Hey, let's not get too serious. This is a comedy show.
Yes. Oh, sure.
You know.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. My guest this week is John Lechago. Jester, you need to relax. My guest this week is John Lechago, writer. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Perfectly. Lechago. Thank you.
Writer and director of horror slash comedy films such as Blood Gnome.
Yes.
Bio Slime.
That's pretty funny.
Killjoy Goes to Hell.
Even funnier.
And other ones. And you have two new films, both released in 2016, right?
Yes.
Yes. All right. We're going to hear a message, something about all of that. But first, right. A message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is monster maker and prankster, John Lechago.
Great to be here, yes. Denzel.
You are a monster maker.
I had to think about that for a second. Was monster maker? God, you did your research. I guess I used to make monsters and stuff, so I don't really think of myself as monster maker anymore. But yeah, you could say that. You could say it. There are a few in my closet.
Nightmare maker just was too
Nightmare
long.
Maker. I guess so. I guess maybe I could say monster. How would you say I inspire monsters? You know, I have a great guy making my monsters called Tom Devlin. He's now in. He does all my clown makeup, monster makeup, and stuff. So I think he's a real monster maker. I just inspire monsters.
You tell him what kind of things you think would be creepy and funny.
Killjoy, he's got down. His friend was Trent Haga, who played Killjoy, and he's like, don't worry, I already got his face cast. So yeah. Really, we're just lazy. But he does an incredible job. And then with all of the monsters, I give him kind of like a light sketch, you know, because yeah. I do have artistic training.
Yeah.
And he, all of a sudden, he comes up with a monster.
Now, let's just back up for the benefit of our listening audience
yes.
who doesn't know. Can you give us little kind of log lines for first Blood Gnome?
Log line for Blood Gnome. Fingernail sketch. I haven't done this in a long time, yeah. But I got to practice these log lines. Blood Gnome is a bloodthirsty little gnomish creatures that look more like gremlins. In search of blood to feed their queen.
Feed their queen.
Exactly. There's a queen in there. You have to wait till the end.
Queen Gnome.
Queen Gnome. And they harvest this blood from BDSM practitioners, you know, that are involved in blood sports, so they can extract the endorphins from their, you know, after their sessions. So it's just...
And it's funny.
I think that's the best thing about it. It's
okay.
funny.
And yes. This was your first film, 2004. You made it on $5,000. Is that correct?
$5,000 that was given. I ended up spending another $1,200 of my own money, and we got it in the can.
That's pretty good. Pretty
that's
good.
Awesome.
All right. Another movie, Bio Slime.
Bio Slime, yeah. That's another one which was self-funded, did pretty well overseas for a micro-budget film. You know, remember, this yeah. is now just $10,000 to get in the can.
And so what's the idea with Bio Slime?
Oh, Bio Slime was... the general idea was like, I want a slime monster. Slime is going to be easy. And it was... We did a few tests and everything. I made a few batches of slime. It looked wonderful. But then when we scaled it up, the moment we dressed something, by the time we got the cameras rolling, it's on the floor. So... it became more of like a biotech tentacle movie, maybe.
Okay, biotentacle. Yeah. I remember Toxic Avenger. That was a great kind of slimy bio, you know,
yeah.
different kind of thing. But
yes, yeah. but
also funny.
Yeah, very, very funny. Probably a lot more ridiculous than Bio Slime, but still Bio Slime. I mean, the logline for that is a bunch of people get stuck in a studio in the middle of a building where they shoot porn. Mm-hmm. You know. So that's which was kind of like my life at the time. I literally had an office in the building where they had a bunch of studios where they shot porn, and they were all on vacation. I said, hey, can I use a couple of these studios and stuff? So, you know, you kind of like use what's in your environment.
And so in the porn environment, something goes wrong. There's some kind of disease that starts to wreak havoc, or what comes to life? What's the slime?
The slime is, it's the opening scene is guy, you know, shows up with a mysterious briefcase with a creature inside, and something goes wrong. He gets killed. The girlfriend. That happens all the time. Drives the briefcase to an unsuspecting porn studio, you know, so, and
hilarity always ensues. And the third one, I just want to get a little bit, this is the one you directed me in, this Killjoy 3, Killjoy Goes to Hell. Just give us a top line.
Killjoy 4.
That's Killjoy 4. Killjoy Goes to Hell. I'm so sorry.
I got to keep those.
Killjoy 3 was the one that was shot in China.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes, but that was Killjoy 3 was the first one that I did for Full Moon, and Killjoy 4 was the second one, Killjoy Goes to Hell.
And what happens in Killjoy Goes to Hell?
Well, Killjoy basically is a series about this demonic clown, and I started to change things by saying, you know what, Killjoy is a lot more interesting than the victims. So Killjoy became the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And in this one, he literally goes to hell. He is put on trial for not being evil enough, for letting his last victim go.
He had a moment of mercy somehow.
No, he just had a moment of incompetence, which they do, you know, frown upon, and that's why he's on trial to see if he's really up to snuff to being king of the demon clowns. And of course, one of the best moments of the film is the evil clown community comes together to see what they're going to do about their boss. And one of them is played by my interviewer, Denzel.
Yeah, I play the Harlequin.
Harlequin, yes. You're the top clown. You're the...
Well,
basically.
The Harlequin is the clown in the pantheon of clown status. The Harlequin thinks that he's smarter and prettier than all the other clowns.
Absolutely. No one pies a Harlequin. They all pie down, right?
Yes. You punch up, but you pie down.
Oh, you punch up and pie down. Awesome.
Actually, you always pie up.
You do? Okay.
No, I mean... That's what makes it funny. If you pie down, it's actually not funny.
Oh, I see. This I'm learning.
If you look at the Three Stooges, for example, they're low status animals, and they operate in high status environments, right?
Yes.
High society and stuff.
And of course,
what happens there? And Charlie Chaplin too, and the Laurel and Hardy, through the pieing and all the stuff, what clowns do is they bring other people down to their level.
Yes,
and that's what's funny about it. But the clowns don't die or get hurt, or they just walk away, and everyone else, you know, suffers this loss of status. And you know, the Stooges or Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton, you know, remain essentially unchanged.
That's true. Oh, okay, great. So in this story, actually, we had your character get destroyed.
Yeah.
Face obliterated because all of a sudden the hierarchy was taken over by the Communist Party, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so now all clowns, demon clowns, have equal status.
Yes. One thing I'm going to say, though, in all the stuff that I've seen, the special effects, the monsters, they're amazing. Like, it's really gory and disgusting.
Okay. Well, you know, that has to come in with the territory for a Full Moon feature. Yep. I do have more of that compared to most of the other Full Moon features because I've been doing visual effects for them for a while now. And I do have, you've done your research, I do have makeup effects ability in my... in my repertoire. I don't do it professionally. I'm an artist. I went to art school. I know how to handle materials. So most of the time, I would just put it together myself. I'm a bit of a mad scientist that way. If there's something that I want to achieve, I'll find a way of doing it or faking it or just developing a technique to get it on screen. And that's the only thing I know I need to do is to get it on screen. I don't care what if it's a correct method or not to get it there. So I pride myself, as far as my contemporaries go, to having more gore and visual effects. Although I'm not a visual effects artist, you know, wink, wink. I really am not. I was not trained that way at all.
stop being modest.
Oh.
And stop saying that you're not qualified to do these things. Look.
Yeah. No. Actually, that's a point of pride. Yeah. That's, I really don't want to. I keep on telling people that because I'm like, no, I'm really a writer-director and stuff. But, you know, it's like, no. But I don't want to be a bro.
You're the guy that makes it happen.
Yes,
if it wasn't
you.
For you, none of these people would be doing any of this crazy stuff anyway. So.
That's probably true. You know. I hope to really be more of an instigator, you know, and get, and of course, get bigger budgets where I can find young people who want to do this and say, okay, we're going to do this, and you're going to make it even better by doing it this way.
Yeah.
Instead of having to do all the stuff before, let's do the cheat. And that'll look good on screen.
What do you think is wrong with you that you are drawn to tell these stories?
Well, that's a great question.
Something must be damaged.
Certainly. You know, I could probably open up a can and tears get start flowing and everything. But
now,
you
this
know,
is where we're going to do it. This,
okay.
We could probably, yes.
When I came to Los Angeles, 4 years old, my mother's from Argentina. My father grew up in Argentina. He's Spanish. She really never got a great handle of English, despite being very well educated and stuff. Always had the accent. And so I've always kind of felt a little bit like an outsider, you know. Not to mention, of course, we have tremendous anxiety in our family, you know. That just worries all the time. And I look back now and going, what the hell were we worried about? Oh, that's funny. It's just no real reason.
I have heard that Argentina has like the highest per capita use of psychiatrists and therapeutic modalities
really?
Of any country in the world.
I've not heard that. I've heard that it has the highest use of plastic surgery.
No, I think they go together. Both of those things.
Sense.
Yeah, no, they go together.
Yes,
yeah,
they do. They do.
So they may not be fucked up, but they think they're fucked up.
That could be true. That could be true. I mean, my mother comes from a small city. It's probably not small anymore. It's huge. But basically the equivalent of being like a woman from Texas and everything. It's a gaucho land. You know, it's like basically where the South American cowboys are and stuff. So there are a lot of – it's a huge culture shock. So even then growing up here, being born in Canada and growing up here and just getting to know American friends, even though I was so young, I've always felt in culture shock and still do to this day. It's just kind of weird. I think my experience is not really very different than many other people, but when in a socially conservative family and upbringing where you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that, I think that I was searching for stimulation. I was searching for I was always asking, well, why not? You know, what's the harm? Because there really isn't.
Why can't I take a drill and put it through the hand of my little brother?
Well, that's...
You're a twin. You have a twin.
Yeah, a twin brother, actually, because he would actually beat the crap out of me, totally, because he was bigger and stronger than I am and fantastic martial artist.
Was he the first one out of the womb?
No, I was.
You were?
Yeah, I've always been the...
And he's the one beating you up, because sometimes it works the other way. Like, the first one out of the room tries to push the other one back into the womb.
He came out sleeping, so I busted through, and he slid out. When they turned back, and here there's my brother sleeping. So he's got it good, and he's bigger than me, stronger than me, and a great martial artist. So I would never do that. But we did fight a lot and everything.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem. We've always had interesting stories and been creating monsters since we were little. That's the best thing about having a twin brother. But really, I think what I liked to do in my life was just imagine things a little bit differently, a little bit more extreme. And then as I was, basically going professional as an artist, doing film, video, going into art school, you want to try and communicate these things that people don't usually do, you know, blood, gore, sex, comedy. Yeah, all together. I mean, what do we really want to do? I mean, seriously, what do we fantasize about? You know, people say, oh, romance and love. And it's like, I think you're probably thinking more about sex. Come on.
That's what we really fantasize
about. Which is really a disgusting, messy experience, which, you know.
At its best.
At its best, yes. That's what it's, you know.
If you're lucky, it's disgusting and messy.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, all right.
You know, so, anyway.
Well, see, here's another angle on this thing. Do you go to conferences and stuff?
I do talk to the fans a lot, yeah. Especially now on Facebook. I like to keep in contact with them. And the thing is that I'm a fan. So I first think, well, what would I like to see? Oh, yeah, let's get this beautiful actress and just put a whole bunch of makeup and slime and tubes coming out of her. And people go, whoa! And you look on the internet and you find stuff like Japanese tentacle porn, you know? And it's like, wow, this is a huge thing that not even so many Japanese people know about. When my production assistant is a Japanese girl, says, why are you doing this? What is it? And I said, okay, look, this is from a Japanese site. Let me show you this. And then I come back 45 minutes later. She's still looking this thing. I can't look away. It's like, yes, exactly. She had no idea that was part of her culture. To answer that question, I think that I have other ways of keeping in touch with what the audience wants, but I don't think it's only what horror fans like. I think that there's something very literally visceral about it, that somewhere in our ancient psychological evolution, there was an attraction towards, you know, or if anything, a morbid curiosity.
Towards the forbidden.
Towards the forbidden, to things that are, you know, kind of dangerous and sexual at the same time. I think that kind of gives us, kind of puts us on the edge of just feeling something intense. And because I've been thinking, especially with this last film and developing some new things, that people get a huge thrill about violating other people. Yeah. That's terrible. It really is a terrible thing. I think that people experience it in the safe environment in BDSM, you know, in organized BDSM. I think that was kind of uncovered when people were doing what's called torture porn on movies, torture porn, which kind of started off with Reservoir Dogs, Tarantino's film, where one of the antagonists was torturing a policeman who was tied up to a chair, and people took that scene and made entire movies out of it, or movies like Saw. And to me, I found that kind of disturbing. But you have to recognize that they're still getting audiences for a reason. And that I think people get a thrill of like, oh, it's you, not me. You know, I have this power over you. And again, personally, I think that's terrible, and I couldn't do it myself. But I'd love to expose that. I'd love to expose the idea. And sometimes you can find situations where people on both sides are willing participants, you know, and that's, I think, a great way to explore that whole idea. I don't think it should be taboo, because when the moment people say, oh, that's taboo to even think about, that's when you have these horrible things happen in society, when we're not educated that, yes, you are one moment, you're just, you know, a few psychological steps away from being a highly abusive prison guard. You know, circus and cake. That's how you control the population. That frightens me. That absolutely frightens me, because that kind of, you know, that kind of behavior and just saying, okay, this is okay. I mean, was that what led to the fall of the Roman Empire? You know, is because they said, okay, let's make it a spectacle. Whereas in other, what I'm trying to do is like, no, this is fake. This is fake. This is, and I'm going to combine comedy so that this is an outlet. So you go, okay, that's, kind of puts it, I don't know how. Just the last point on this, I feel as though if we comment on it somehow and make fun of it, we can make fun of it and at the same time say, yeah, that does tickle you, doesn't it? You bastard. You know, these were your evil thoughts and that's wrong, but enjoy it here. You know, this is fantasy. Keep it there.
Keep it there. You have two films that you finished working on.
Yes.
In 2016.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit. One is called Feast of Fear. The tagline is Terror Served Raw.
Yeah, Feast of Fear is a film that produced with some collaborators of mine. We decided to, let's put a film together ourselves. It's a very simple idea. A demon, a pig demon, who is trapped in hell in his own butcher shop, and his sole mission is just to butcher young, innocent college students for the demons of hell. Basically, demons of hell feast on young, tender flesh, and that's his job, just to serve up the cuts. There was no... Not really any deeper than that. And I think there's no other reason that we did it except that it just was a great image. You know, this giant monster pig with long, you know, heavy metal goth hair, you know, who also wants to be in band. You know, he practices at home and stuff.
He's got to have insecurities and aspirations like the rest of us.
Absolutely. But he's terrible. He's really terrible at playing
He plays the guitar.
So the pig really is a lot of our own insecurities. He's kind of like he tries to do a lot of artistic things, action. He has these other dreams, but he doesn't put in the work. And so the only thing that he really puts time and effort in is being horrible and cutting people up. And to me, I'm like, when that's what a lot of people... I really do criticize laziness. That's one of the things I like to do. And I think that's the problem with a lot of people. You know, especially people who want to come into the entertainment industry and say, oh yeah, this will be easy. I think maybe that's my criticism of them, is this giant pig, and then he gets frustrated, throws a tantrum, and cuts up more victims.
Okay. All right. Well, that seems to make sense. So Feast of Fear, Live Large Entertainment.
Yes.
That's a company you're part of, or...
I'm part of that company. Okay. It was put together by the financier and stuff, and so this is for that film.
Yeah. Now, just based on the storyline, did you get any money from PETA or from like vegan groups that are anti? You know, they want to put the pig in the driver's seat. Did you try to get any money from those people?
No, not at all. Maybe that would have been a great idea.
Next time?
I think they'd hate me.
Maybe anyway, for international distribution.
You're right.
And the other thing that came out in 2016 is Killjoy's Psycho Circus. Killjoy, the demon of vengeance, trickster god and killer clown, has finally made it to Earth, along with his gruesome crew, Freak Show, Punchy, and the sexy, psychotic Batty Boop. Killjoy is free to terrorize mortals in new and excruciating ways. In this one, he also has his own web series called Psycho Circus. He's running a movie and merchandise company with the notorious Hambo the Ranch Hand. I like that.
That was cut.
Hambo's cut. Hambo's cut off.
Yes.
All right, we're going to scratch Hambo.
Scratch Hambo.
There's like puns all in that somewhere. Anyway.
Yeah, there is.
But he's got a web series. Well, so what's, this is Killjoy 5, 6?
Killjoy 5. This officially is Killjoy 5. Killjoy 5. Yeah. The log line that you just read was created on the first version of the script, then Charles Band and I had discussion about Hambo, which is another Full Moon character. I was like, no, we can't use Hambo and stuff. So that happens. We use a couple of other characters from other, from the Evil Bong series. Which is just an evil bong that talks to you as you get high and then does something where you die.
I thought Evil Bong convinced the smokers to kill other people.
Kills the smokers. Kills the smokers by some... it's just getting really confusing, but those aren't my films, so I don't know how to explain it, but
Evil Bong.
Full Moon is masterful, is coming up with the high concept weird ideas, but you know, them like Troma and Roger Corman, that's their thing.
Killjoy
Psycho Circus, right? So that one, it has some crossover, but basically it's Killjoy comes to Earth. He has his own series, but now he is just really feeling the strain and the weight of having to, you know, pay taxes, having to do immigration. I mean, real life just hits him, which is what because I've always thought, well, these people come to Earth, demons come to Earth, and they don't deal with reality. I think that would be fun.
It's all fun and games for them.
Yeah, exactly.
And that doesn't make any sense.
No, I think we need the real drama, which is, you know, dealing with your agent, because the first scene that we see him in, he's talking to his... to his agent manager bookie, you know,
same
girl. Yes. So, So it, we really kind of just start a little bit boring, I think. Or not boring, just really in kind of like trying to put these ridiculous clowns in a little bit of reality. And then we end up in outer space. In a space battle.
In a space battle.
Yes.
Now, for the people that do not know these other creatures, what is it about... tell us about Freak Show. One of his sidekicks is quite a character.
Freak Show, yes, he's awesome. Originally, he was created to be played because we shot the first one that I did. We shot in China, and I said I need this really cool character that can be played by a Chinese actor who does not understand English, because we can only fly over a certain amount of American actors and stuff. Oddly enough, he ended up being played by a Chinese actor who was a friend and collaborator of mine. And who can't speak English, but he was still played by, as mime. Now, the thing about Freak Show is that he is a conjoined twin, and his ability, which is played by a little puppet baby twin, and he can launch that twin out and like a grappling hook, grab a victim and pull him back. You know, this little sucker is a killer. The little baby twin is just like this blood-sucking monster, and the blood gets sucked back through the tubes into the bigger Freak Show character.
So Freak Show is a mime.
Yes.
He doesn't speak, but his twin launches out, latches on, and...
And reels him in and does wrecks all sorts of habit. In the first film that I directed, that creature was killed, destroyed. So when he was resurrected again, they made a bionic baby Freak Show for his side. So we had fun with that. And in the last film, Freak Show speaks finally, because this is my friend. I was like, okay, man, you're going to have lines, you know. It's like, but I'm a mime. I go, yeah, Freak Show, the talking mime. That's your thing now, you know. That's your gig. So, and the baby is gone, is missing until the finale of the film. I don't think I'm giving anything away, but until the finale of the film. Yeah. You'll see how he comes back.
All right. Bionic baby.
Yes, yeah. Bionic baby. I have a new venture starting this year. This might be a little bit premature because we're still doing the LLC search for the name, but I think it's safe to say Mad Scientist Films is a venture that I'm doing with an old partner of mine that started me off with my first two films, which was Magus and Blood Gnome. So that was with Randy Mermel of Turning Point Productions. Now we're going to form Mad Scientist Films. We don't have any scripts. That's part of our strategy right now, is we're actually going to assemble pitches, a series of pitches, using my artistic abilities and other artists who are collaborating with me, who I've gotten to know and have done great work with me on my movies. I'm reaching out to them saying, okay, let's try this. Because once you produce a script, for the people who are interested in the entertainment industry, you'll find offices are full of scripts to the ceiling. But that's, and then you realize, and you talk to people, it says, that's not, I mean, yes, on paper, that's what, no pun intended, people sell. But what people really sell in this business are pitches. They buy and they sell, they buy pitches. So that's what we're going to work on. Because then the person that you're pitching to says, well, I want this. Okay, well, that's how we're going to write the script, instead of committing to something which becomes a little bit harder to describe.
So what are you guys, what are you looking for?
A sci-fi fantasy comedy. Sci-fi, I love comedy. I absolutely, and I'm starting to love it even more, because I think that's the best way of saying what I really want to say. I love all genres of film, even musicals. There might be one in my future, but I like things that are very visceral, that are very visual, that have monsters, creatures, fantasy. But I think it, you know, you can beat people over the head with fantastic images all day long if there isn't some sort of message that makes, or some statement that makes you ask a question, it's not worth very much to me. And right. I think comedy is the best way of making people ask the question.
You had some questions for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so this is great. I'm here being interviewed by one of my favorite characters in one of my films. And Denzel played the Harlequin clown, the one of the basically, I think you could call him a Congress member of the Speaker of the House of the demon clown world in my movies. And it was just one scene, and his character ends up getting killed by Punchy the clown, who's taken over and basically turns it into a socialist organization.
Yeah.
You know, it's no more, everyone's equal now.
Punchy is a carny clown, which is the bottom of the barrel.
Right.
He doesn't even speak English.
He speaks actually carny.
Carny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Al Burke, the actor, being a professional wrestler, can speak carny, you know.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome. And different variations, which he told me about. And I go, wow, that's, okay, that's awesome.
You mean there's like a North carny, yeah, South carny, East, West Coast carny?
Yeah,
they're carny dialects?
There are carny dialects, wow. Which if you interview Al Burke, which you should, because he's...
Al Burke, fascinating. This is the guy who was the guy in the thing.
He plays Punchy the Clown. He was a professional wrestler, stuntman, just really, it's got quite a few stories.
All right, so, I have him in.
Absolutely. But he can speak variations of carny. So anyway, the point is that you came in and did your audition, and it was, I just looked at Charles Banner and said, okay, that's it. You know, and then, of course, your cohort was a guy called Tim Chismar, who's also a stand-up comedian. He came in, and together you guys just scared the hell out of us. It was really creepy. There's just so much. It was like a wave of stuff. So I'm really a lazy director. I'm not an actor's director. I'm more like Ridley Scott, which I've listened to all of his behind-the-scenes commentary, and he said, you know, 85% of it or more is in the casting. Once you get that, then, you know, you're pretty good, you know. And he gives very little feedback on his to his actors on set, because he knows pretty much they're already doing what he wants. And I kind of feel the same way. And maybe to be a visual director like I am, that's how you want it. So I apologize.
What's the question?
The question, like a senator. Okay,
I know.
Question, yes. Well, go ahead. That's why I need you, Disc. Yeah. There you go. Keep
What's
me on track.
The question? Come on.
Gavel. Okay. So the question is, how did you arrive at that character? Was that something that you looked at your sides and said, okay, I know this, because you hit it kind of perfectly. It was an aristocratic clown.
Yeah.
You know, that was just taken to ridiculous extent. So.
I knew that character. I'm quite familiar with that character. Okay. All I did was to be the smarter than and prettier than.
Yes.
And I had developed this voice, which is a kind of high cackly, you know, yes, voice. And I realized this was an opportunity for me to bring like a sleazy, creepy, sexual,
yes,
you know, like sadistic. You know, if you really are this guy, you're going to enjoy pushing other people down. Like,
yes,
I'm the hammer, and all the other clowns are nails.
Yes.
And in this case, for your show, I could make it as inappropriate in a violent, sexual way,
yes,
as I wanted. And I didn't have to do much to let that happen. I just had to enjoy that part.
Oh, I'm so happy you enjoyed it. Yes. Oh, great.
It was easy.
Yeah.
The part was made for... It was like a costume I had been wearing secretly for a long time.
Oh, that's how we like it. I am a lazy director as far as that goes.
You got it.
You know, which I really am not a lazy director. I think when someone has it and they come and I feel it, though, yeah, and the other people around them feel it, we're done. We can get the message across. Because what you explained is basically what that character was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Criticism of someone like that who's just, I'm in this position for no other reason than you're supposed to just kind of worship me and I can put you down without any consequences, and the whole point of it was that he got the most extreme consequences, you know.
Yeah. I am where and who I am because you're a fucking idiot.
Yes.
That's the character.
Yes. Yeah. And then, you know,
it comes very natural to me.
Yes. And then, of course, the lowest one, the hobo clown, comes and smashes your face to goo.
Yes.
Which is
That's a revolution.
Exactly.
It's a revolutionary moment.
I do my revolutions through just clown, you know, clown politics.
Like Trotsky, Che, Punchy.
Yes, like that through. I like
line.
That. Yeah. I like that.
You can maybe get a T-shirt that has the three of them on, you know.
Absolutely, that will happen. My other question is,
yes,
so if you that character was resurrected, what would he do then? What would that clown character, after being obliterated, because demon clowns can be resurrected, what's his place in the world?
Well, I would imagine that I would have revenge on my mind.
Really?
Like, I the natural order is I'm supposed to be at the top.
Yes.
The Harlequin. and I have been lowered.
Yes.
Obliterated, but also embarrassed, humiliated.
Humiliated,
which
okay.
Which is the worst thing that can happen to the top of... I mean, my character in the clown world is like Oedipus. You know, yeah. I maintain my verticality at all costs.
Ah, okay.
And that's why when I get lowered, flattened, it's so gratifying because I refuse to bow.
Yeah.
And so when I come back, I need to right that wrong. And everyone, I'm there to crush everyone and anyone that has opposed me, especially the ones who were personally responsible. So I've got a vendetta and an agenda.
That is really frightening. I'm
and
scared
I'm not
going
to be fair. I'm going to fight dirty
sure.
at every possible moment.
So my idea would then be, he kind of wants some redemption. He kind of sees the wrongs of his ways. He kind of wants to, get in, basically... get back into the club, make friends. And you're saying, no, that would not happen.
He would fake all of that.
Ooh, that's awesome.
He would fake remorse. He would fake having been humbled.
Wow.
And he would come back in saying, I've learned my lesson. Let me back in. I'll be a team player. And all of that is a facade
yeah.
for his evil, maniacal... revenge, basically.
I'm frightened right now. I'm really a little bit scared because I think there are people like that. That could be...
Yeah. Well, and it's also like the Batman Joker kind of character, right? It's
You can
be charming, but it's manipulative.
Joker is immutable.
Yeah.
You're right.
There is a charm,
yeah.
but it's, Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm basically Killjoy's journey right now is I'm making him more and more human and actually able to feel for other people. Not generally, because when his fan club comes to save him, he uses them, says, yes, you can help me, and he uses them as human shield. You know, a lot of times when people get out of step and everything goes horribly awry, you know, and I really want to point that out and say, yeah, we should laugh at that.
People ask me a lot, and I ask, why do you think there is this fear of clowns?
Right, right. Why are people afraid of clowns? I think that there's an evolutionary aspect of it, and I really, really had to think hard. It's like, is it the face paint? Is the attitude? If you take the face paint away, the scary clowns that people are trying to be intimidating are scary. They're out there to be intimidating, and it's like, well, and if they do that, then you punch them in the face because that's exactly what they're inviting. You know, if someone tries to intimidate me and stuff, I punch them in the face, and that's their acid test. But then I also thought, well, there's a face paint, and it's like, well, you know, back when humans were primitive, and sometimes even to this day, that's war paint. You know, you paint your body up with all these weird designs to make you look even scarier, and then what inevitably happened is death, torture, rape, you know, these really horrible things, you know, and that's usually for the person not wearing the face paint. So I think there's really something about that, or someone dresses themselves up just looking really crazy, which in the ancient world, a clown, a scary clown, would be someone ready for combat. You cannot reason with it. I think that's the thing that would scare me the most. You know, that's actually my biggest fear is not spiders. It's unreasonable people because there's nothing you can do about them. Right. They will not reason with you. I mean, what can you do? And maybe that's a clown. Can you reason with a clown?
No.
And they are out to destroy. So evil clowns basically. So you're basically the evil clown is almost like a human flaw, you know, where you can't reason with them.
All clowns, evil or happy.
I think
happy clowns are this enthusiastic, fallible, and indestructible.
Okay.
Right. Like if you're watching the circus
point.
And you have the Harlequin, and then there's the lower status clowns.
Yeah.
What are they doing? They're picking up pieces of wood and turning around, or picking up a ladder. They're moving stuff, and they're whacking other clowns in the head.
Yeah.
But they're enjoying their work.
Yes.
You know, they're out there to do a good job, and in the process, other people are getting hurt, and that's. You know, that's why the Harlequin is yelling at them and slapping them, and you know, and then they turn around and whack them with, and they whack somebody else with the ladder. You know, but they're trying to do the best they can. Oh, and they're having a great time.
Wow.
So these are even the happy ones. These
That's
are,
a great
so this
point.
This is not evil or happy. This is just enthusiastic, fallible, indestructible. That's the...
I haven't even thought about that.
That's the blueprint. Yeah.
Okay. Now All I'm right. scared.
Now, so here's a couple other okay. questions. These are my...
Yeah.
I think that everybody in the world has a kind of superpower.
Yes.
Something that you just channel naturally without having to try to do it. Do you know what that is for okay. you?
My superpower... that's a great question. I think my superpower is to not give up on an artistic challenge. You know, basically, if I see a problem as far as putting together an imagery or getting a message across, I just will not stop. You know, and I don't think that I think most superpowers are really just just come about by determination. You know, so it's like, what are you determined about? So if I'm on a set or want to create a story or a bunch of things, you know, people will say, well, that's completely impossible and ridiculous. And I'll say, well, yeah, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think animators are like that, too. They just tend to be a little bit off.
So commitment, you know, like.
It's commitment. All of my other artistic abilities, people say, oh, that's incredible. That's awesome. And, you know, that's amazing that you must be born with that. And I think it's really just a lot of practice, you know, just from being early childhood drawing what I could see. And that going to sculpture, that going to building props, that's going to building things. And then with story, I love stories and playing with my twin brother and making up stories and continuing. Those stories today would be terrible. But and in fact, when I first started screenwriting, I think my screenplays now, I look back and they're terrible. But it's like, you know, I've made 7 movies now, but I've written over 25 screenplays that were completed and probably twice as much that were not completed. So it's just practice. So I think the real superpower is just taking those things that I want to do and putting determination and, just work.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
You know, I think these days I just like to, you know, I could do a lot of things to try and educate myself and become a better person. But at the end of the night, right before I go to sleep, I watch, you know, Fail Army on YouTube. Because it's basically clowns without makeup, you know. And it's like it relaxes me. I laugh at how dumb people are and then realize that there are many unvideotaped moments where I'm just like that. So that's
right.
It.
Well, now here's the final big question here.
Yes.
You are going to do this.
Yes.
You are going to be hit in the face with a pie.
Yes.
And you're going to receive this pie with love and generosity in your heart.
Yes.
Because you've given permission to the thrower to throw it.
Yes.
Not violent, it's not angry, it's love on both sides. Who would you like to hit you in the face with a pie?
Who would I like to have hit me in the face with a pie?
Anyone living or dead throughout history, whatever you want.
I think that is a great question. I can't think of a single person. I am now just seeing people line up. I would love, maybe I have to say this, I would love my mom to hit me in the face with a pie.
How would that be for you, Jim?
I think, you know, because I talked to her about her briefly a little bit earlier, and when you said, okay, what is in your life that was traumatic that you got you to this point where you have to say something? And it was mostly my mom, you know. And then I said, no, but I love my mom. I do, and I don't blame her for how she was in the last 3 years of her life. Sorry, I choke up a little bit about this because it is emotional. But the last 3 years of her life, she figured it out. She understood that, you know, what it was to love. Really understood, instead of having so much anxiety. And I think she needed that because she got basically hit with an emotional pie herself. It's like, this is all the getting hit in the face with the pie, saying all this stuff that you think is important. No, bam. And I think in my ideal situation, because I love this, what you said about pies, is like we should be hitting each other with pies. You know, just when we get a little bit too full of ourselves or start going off, it's like, here's a pie, boom, now you have to take a few moments to think about stuff, get the pie off your face, clean it up and everything, and you just say, okay, why did you hit me with a pie? You know, so I think I would have liked to have that opportunity with my mom. Because after I get hit with a pie, then it's like going, okay, cool, let's talk. Why'd you hit me with a pie? You know, let's get, and that's what a real relationship is, right?
And so I heard you say she died a few years ago.
She's been a while now.
But in the last few years of her life, she got it. You said something turned around or opened up between you two, not just for her, but between you, it sounds like.
My siblings as well had a similar thing. So people really just starting to stand up for themselves. And then she realized, oh, wait a second. I'm not getting the response that I wanted, and even the response I wanted is, I'm starting to realize, is not appropriate. So she really started to change, and I saw her do almost like experimenting, like learning how to become loving. And at first she was terrible, you know, it was really awkward, but I just like grin and bared it, you know, her trying to be really authentically nice. And then she got quite good at it. And I just wish I had more time.
Wish you had more time.
Yeah.
And so this activity of receiving a pie from her would be something that you could do together.
Yeah, exactly. That's great.
There's one more thing I like to do here, which is anagram stuff on this show. Because I think that sometimes when you anagram a word or a phrase, it reveals some meanings that may resonate. And I got a couple here. So I anagrammed Killjoy Goes to Hell. And read that first one.
Okay, awesome. Jelly-like goth solo.
Yeah, so that's an anagram for Killjoy Goes to Hell, is jelly-like goth solo. Get any images of that? Is it, because, you know, it's basically the same thing just with all the different letters.
I probably have a sick mind. See, a cute goth girl doing a solo solo dance covered in jelly and wiggling, I guess. Could off the top of my head.
Batty Boop, sure.
Batty Boop, but actually I'm kind of thinking like a Suicide Girl, one of those goth girls and everything. They have a lot of piercing, and a lot of dreadlock, you know, goth dreadlock. Okay. Those really colorful things. Full of jelly. Yeah. Just I like jelly and jiggling stuff.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yes. The next thing I anagrammed was your name, John Lechago. Anagrams to
Hooch Jangle. Wow.
Isn't that a great name?
Yeah, Hooch Jangle. Okay. It's
an alter ego name.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. Hooch means... What does hooch mean? Sometimes it means like liquor, right?
Yeah.
Some people...
Could be.
Hooch, jangle, kind of... I don't know. Maybe that's more like a witch doctor, I think. The drunk witch doctor. Okay.
Hooch Jangle. I think I got... what I got was a kind of... a guy that could have been in the bar scene at the first Star Wars, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's one of those guys, one of those monsters hanging out at the bar, like an intergalactic pirate or a ne'er-do-well. That's what I
got. Yeah, but if it comes from me, it would be the guy that tries to break up the inevitable, like, late lightsaber incident and stuff, therefore completely ruining the scene.
I see.
By creating peace. And a dialogue.
Well, this is some alter ego of you.
Yes.
The next thing I anagrammed...
I would screw it up by trying to do good.
Okay. Blood Gnome.
Do me oblong. Absolutely. Yeah, it's like, you know, Blood Gnome was all about BDSM sex and weirdness and all that kind of stuff. And the thing about it, if you ever watched the movie, was the BDSM sex was really portrayed in a good light. Like, it was always a lot of fun. So, it's all about being done in a
do me oblong.
Happy way. Oblong. Yeah, that's great.
And the last one is Feast of Fear.
That's the last one. A far-off tease. I don't know. Let's see. A Feast of Fear, a far-off tease. I think we're pretty good.
When's it coming out?
We don't know. Selling a film that's independent is always an interesting thing. So it's been finished for about a year now, and we have an agent taking it to the markets.
Trying to find some distribution.
Yes, trying to find some distribution. Distribution has changed dramatically even in the last 5 years because it's no longer, okay, cool, you have a DVD deal, which was raw. If you have a finished film,
let me interrupt. So it is a far off tease.
Oh, nice. Okay, yes.
That, far off tease. I don't. Again, I'm telling you, we don't need to be serious here. We're working with our the most tenuous connections. Don't try to make sense out of stuff and give information. And
you got to whip me into shape. Yeah. Absolutely.
Feast of Fear has been completed. It doesn't have distribution at the moment, so it is a far off tease.
Yes, thank you.
That's the way the thing is supposed to work.
Thank you, yes.
This is why you're on the show.
This is right, to be educated.
Not to help people understand the dynamics of film distribution in 2017. No!
That's right.
You're here to tell
us
about...
Okay, screw it, everything I said. Yeah, right.
There you go.
That was great.
So where can people find you or find more information about you or send you money if they owe you money?
Send me money, definitely. So here's the thing. I'm pretty easy to find on the web. Google me. I'm easy to find.
I get to be a little bit of a dick because I'm the host of the show.
I think that's great.
And we're running out of time.
That's right.
And, you know, I'd like to thank my guest, Jokester of the Macabre, John Lechago, for coming in this week. Do you like that, Jokester of the Macabre?
I like it. I love
it. I'm just making up stuff that I thought would suit you. If you'd like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, this is what it looks like.
And it's beautiful.
It's
got to tell you.
Yeah, I just got one.
It's the second. It's Death Star number two, by the way.
Death Star number two, yeah.
Yes.
Chester, hang on. Chester, relax there for a minute. If you'd like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. There's a photo of this thing on our Facebook page. This is my dog. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week or, you know, a reasonable facsimile thereafter. Thanks, John.
Thank you.